from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Edinburgh, Scotland, once again, although careful listeners might have noticed that last week's broadcast started with me saying I was in Edinburgh and ended up with me saying so long from New Orleans. You know, those were the old days when flying was so easy you could do it in the space of 1 hour. Though that was then, this is now. And we start off this broadcast with some good news. You know, the United States President George W. Bush is, according to Agence France-Presse, often spoofed as an intellectual lightweight. But au contraire, suggests Agence France-Presse, he quoted Albert Camus in a speech last year in Brussels praising the U.S.-Europe alliance. And now, the same news service reports that Bush, on his vacation at his Texas ranch, this according to White House spokesman Tony Snow, that on the ranch, Bush has read Albert Camus' 1946 novel, The Stranger, in English. Of course, in English. Of course, what Tony Snow didn't point out is that Bush thinks it was a book called The Strangler. But that's another story. Ladies and gentlemen, are we safer? And if we're safer, from what? It's a good weekend to be thinking about all that, I guess, in the wake of what we think we know. British officials, according to the Times of London, and by the way, I am in Edinburgh, and Great Britain has more Sunday newspapers. It's just ridiculous how many Sunday newspapers are published in this teeny little country. It's a common practice on radio and television broadcasts to bring people in and have them pore over the newspapers and give their take on their favorite three or four stories. I was in one of those broadcasts this morning on the BBC, so I got an armful. The BBC didn't pay for my cab, but they did buy me every Sunday newspaper. And I'm able to report to you thanks to the first and only edition of the Sunday Star that I'm ever going to read, that there are still a lot of very large-breasted women in England or in the British Isles. But this is from other British newspapers, and I'll treat you to a bunch of news from outside the bubble today as a result, because they've already killed enough trees to deforest northwest Washington state. Might as well. British officials are furious with the United States government for jumping the gun by declaring that Al-Qaeda was behind the airline terror plot supposedly allegedly unmasked this week, the Times has learned. Although the capture is being seen as of seven people in Pakistan is being seen as further evidence of an Afghanistan Al-Qaeda connection, the British government remains deeply wary of crediting the terror network with the plan. It's understood Britain asked the United States to avoid making any such assertions, but diplomats believe the request was ignored by U.S. Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff. There's suspicion that the speed with which the U.S. linked Al-Qaeda to the plot was motivated by, according to the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, political considerations. One senior U.K. source said that with the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks approaching, quote, Al-Qaeda is a term which is understood by swing voters. He added, quote, we regard this as simplistic, unquote. Imagine that. The Brits writing regarding the Americans as simplistic. Where's the threat coming from? This from The Independent. Experts are alarmed to discover that a Canadian company is now openly selling an explosive made simply by combining a liquid with a powder in a plastic bottle and then attaching a detonator. Canada, ladies and gentlemen. The Times of London reports that British air passengers will be traveling without insurance for valuable items that they now must put in their checked baggage, such as jewelry, laptops, mobile phones, and MP3 players. Most insurance companies have decided to harden their position since they said early on that they would treat passengers sympathetically. Companies are reluctant to announce blanket payouts for loss of valuables in these special circumstances because they think passengers will exploit any relaxation of policy and have a field day with claims. That's right. Insurance companies are afraid of being exploited by their customers. We are in mirror land, aren't we? And the airlines, of course, will not be reimbursing for loss of valuables that are held in the hold, according to British Airways. This is something that has been forced on us by the Department of Transport. Anybody booking with us may be able to buy some coverage from our insurance company, said British Airways. By the way, British Airways and the British Airport Authority are now engaged in a, what should we call it? What kind of match should we call it? Slagging each other, as the Brits would say, if they were trying to be delicate, about who's responsible for the continued large crowds, slow security procedures, and, quote, unsustainable security precautions, according to one newspaper. After about 2 days of solidarity and mutual support, the British airlines and the British airports are sniping at each other. As to what we can expect, Professor Paul Wilkinson from St. Andrews University here in Scotland, according to the Scotsman newspaper, said he had pointed out the dangers of liquids being taken onto planes long ago. And Philip Knightley, an intelligence expert writing in today's Sunday Independent, said as long ago as 1994, there had been an incident in the Philippines where such liquids were taken aboard planes. But he writes that authorities, knowing the risks, didn't take any steps to counter them, to have equipment at check-in that could detect those liquids because of the cost. This has been a loophole in airport security for some time, according to Paul Wilkinson, security expert. Many of those involved in these things have warned it as a danger. A number of people in the security field have been warning this is an increased type of threat. He said the measure put in place to prevent people traveling with hand luggage would make it more difficult for any bombers still at large. People will get used to turning up at airports with passport documents in a plastic bag, Professor Wilkinson added. Yeah, or they'll stop flying. And what do we expect in the future? Says Andrew Walls, principal analyst for an IT security consultant. Quote, my experience is that once something is placed on the restricted list in the United States, even if the threat is fictitious, it could take a minimum of 3 to 5 years for that object to be removed from the list. There are also those in the British press who suggest that combining a couple of liquids in your seat or even in the bathroom to create an explosion that could actually damage a modern jetliner is a lot more difficult than we've been led to believe. Me, I don't know. I'm just going to take a couple minutes out and then skim through my Cliff Notes version of The Strangler. Hello, welcome to the show.
Funk, rock, do toque da platinela, o samba na passarela dessa alma brasileira, despencando da ladeira na zoeira da banguela. Essa alma brasileira despencando da ladeira na zoeira da banguela. Quem foi? Fez o samba embolar. Quem foi? Fez o corpo sambar. Quem foi? Fez a ema gemer na boa. Quem foi? Fez do corpo cocar. Quem foi? Puxou o corpo pro lugar. Quem foi? E fez do sapo cantor de lagoa. E diz aí, Tião.
Tião, foi, fosse, fui, comprasse, comprei, pagasse, paguei. Me diz quanto foi, foi guia do rei.
Eu só ponho o bop no meu samba quando tem o samba pegar no tamborim. Quando ele pegar e no bandeiro e no zabumba, quando ele entender que o samba não é rumba, aí eu vou misturar Miami com Copacabana, chiclete eu misturo com banana, e o meu samba, e o meu samba vai ficar assim.
Ever have dreamt that I'd be saying from the Grass Market in Edinburgh, Scotland. Yeah, that's what it's called, but it's not what you think. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Are we safer is sort of the theme. It's one of the themes of today's broadcast. And safer from what is the second part of the question. The Bush administration has drafted amendments to a war crimes law that would eliminate the risk of prosecution for political appointees, CIA officers, and former military personnel for humiliating or degrading war prisoners. This according to U.S. officials who talked to the Washington Post on condition of anonymity because they like their knees where they are. The amendments would alter a U.S. law passed a dozen years ago that criminalized violations of the Geneva Conventions. They are so quaint. The draft amendments would narrow the scope of potential political criminal prosecutions to 10 specific categories, including torture, murder, rape, and hostage-taking. Left off the list would be what the Geneva Conventions refer to as outrages upon the personal dignity and deliberately humiliating acts, such as use of the Abu Ghraib thing. People have gotten worried, thinking it's quite likely they might be under the microscope, says a U.S. official. Yeah, that would mean accountability. The removal of any reference to humiliating and degrading treatment will be perceived by experts and probably allies as rewriting the Geneva Convention, says retired Army Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Korn, who was recently chief of the war law branch of the Army's JAG office. Others said the changes could affect how foreigners treat U.S. soldiers. U.S. officials have been responding to that Supreme Court decision on June 29th. That not honoring the Geneva Conventions was illegal. They've asked Congress to pass legislation blocking prisoners' right to sue. They've drafted legislation allowing the consideration of intelligence gathering needs rather than an absolute human rights standard, because who needs those? And they've formulated this War Crimes Act, omitting altogether some crimes that U.S. officials describe as less serious. Two acts considered under international law as constituting outrages, rape, and sexual abuse are listed as prosecutable, but humiliations, degrading treatment, and other acts specifically deemed as outrages by the International Tribunal prosecuting over the Yugoslavia thing would not be among the listed U.S. crimes. The entire family of techniques used at Gitmo and Abu Ghraib is not addressed in any way, shape, or form in the new language authorizing prosecution, says Derek Jinks, a University of Texas assistant professor of law and author of a book on the Geneva Conventions. What a quaint book. Attorney General Gonzalez, at an Armed Services Committee hearing, complained repeatedly about the ambiguity of the phrase outrages upon personal dignity. Says Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, if that provision is vague, then how could the Defense Department instruct its personnel in a July 7th memo to comply with it? Deputy Defense Secretary Gordon England, who signed the memo, responded, he was concerned that degrading and humiliating are relative terms. I mean, he says, what is degrading in one society may not be degrading in another. A point that may be well taken, since I don't think Iraqis yet have a television program like Big Brother. But retired Rear Admiral John Hudson, the Navy's top uniformed lawyer in the late 1990s and now dean of the Franklin Pierce Law Center, says, quote, don't trust the motives of any lawyer who changes a statutory provision that is short, clear, and to the point, replacing it with something that is much longer, more complicated, and includes exceptions within exceptions. We'll try to keep that in mind, sir. And now, just lightening the mood a little bit, let me read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. From Advertising Age, the Bible of the advertising and advertainment, thank you, industries. Showtime promotes weeds with Ode to Marijuana. Ode to Marijuana. I'll read it for you. Dateline, New York. HBO may love its Google Maps promotions for shows like The Sopranos, but Showtime Networks knows that the web can't do everything like run scent strips. So to promote the second season of Weeds, Showtime placed a scent strip ad in the August 24 issue of Rolling Stone that evokes a certain something. It smells like hippies wearing patchouli, says one observer. There was a lot of back and forth about the scent, says George DeBolt, vice president of media at Showtime. We wanted to have the scent be as close as possible to marijuana. It's the buzz factor, if you will, unquote. Can we stop everybody in New York City from saying, if you will? As it were. Fragrance vendors, whose typical struggles include searching for scents that whisper Britney Spears, were not exactly set up to deliver. There were no vials marked Chronic, Amnesia, or Maui Wowie. So the final scent selected may smell like pot getting smoked, or marijuana in a bag, or even hippies, Showtime acknowledged. It's not that the scent is precise, DeBolt says. It's that it communicates the show. It gets people to look up from the magazine. Other elements of the campaign to promote weeds include ice cream trucks dubbed Weeds Munchie Mobiles, showing up at concerts and other events, brownie distribution in busy areas of six cities, and street vendors handing out coffee in Weeds cups. Somebody ran out of gas on that last one. But gas isn't all they ran about, ladies and gentlemen. As you might have observed from me reading the trades for you, copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Adam and Eve, they really blew it with that apple bite. Bonnie and Clyde, they had to do it with the fence in sight. Martha and George, well, they threw a party just to get the guests. Their lives were dramas, sin or crime. Ours is pajamas by dinner time. So what if we're not the kind of couple that you read about? Old Romeo, he never had to take the garbage out. And Juliet, Well, how many years can someone speak in rhyme? Dramas and crime aren't as sublime as pajamas by dinner time. When the others fall, though you're no bogey and I'm no bacall, we'll give each other everything we need. More Jimmy Stewart to my Donna Reed. Forget your Burtons, we're making curtains, cause I'll tell you, son of a gun, oh, we have fun. We lose a PJ with each dish that's done, so what if we're not the kind of couple people gasp about, like Anthony did when Cleopatra left her ass for bout. Who needs the pain or who needs the trauma or that long, hard climb? No, thank you, sir, I'm staying where I am, cause you make my heart stop on a dime. Dramas and crime aren't as sublime as pajamas by dinner time. Pajamas by dinner time. PJs by dinner time.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for news outside the bubble. So much of the news today on this broadcast is, and you're welcome, from The Scotsman. Western diets of addictive foods, high in calories and low in fiber, are causing hormonal imbalances that encourage children to overeat, researchers say. Professor Robert Lustig from the University of California, we have to read about this in The Scotsman, but he's from good old UC, says changes in the manufacturing processes were making food toxic and addictive, leading to obesity. Scotland, along with the rest of the UK, faces a growing health time bomb as more and more youngsters become obese. A third of 12-year-olds in Scotland are overweight, and that just doesn't look good in kilts. Food manufacturing processes, says the study, have created a toxic environment that dooms children to being overweight and looking bad in kilts. Professor Lustig said the way in which food was now processed had changed significantly in the past 30 years, creating an environment in which foods were essentially addictive due to their effect on the hormone insulin. In addition, fructose, sugar, too much, and fiber, not enough, appear to be cornerstones of the obesity epidemic through their effects on insulin, he said. It's known that insulin acts on the brain to encourage eating in two ways. It blocks signals that travel from the body's fat stores. Man, I wish I lived around the corner from one of those. To the brain by suppressing the effectiveness of another hormone, leptin, leading to increased eating and decreased activity. The hormone also promotes the signal that seeks the reward of eating carried by the chemical dopamine, blah, 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 blah. The concept of personal responsibility is not tenable, he says. No child chooses to be obese. Sugar is now added to foods that never used to contain sugar, and fiber was removed. Both were factors which promote insulin production and made foods addictive, Professor Lustig says. But more news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, on the subject of troop readiness. Are we safe enough? This from vaguely inside the bubble, The Washington Post. There are equipment issues for Israeli reservists. It's hard to have the same confidence you're supposed to have, says one Israeli soldier along a road leading into Lebanon. Reservists can be distinguished from active duty soldiers by their unkempt hair and uniforms, and often, they say, by the poor condition of their equipment. As increasing numbers of Israeli reservists are ordered out of their civilian jobs, they're voicing growing alarm over inadequate equipment and training in the face of large-scale casualties in their ranks. It's dramatically different, says an author of several books on the Israeli military. The public outcry over the deaths of the reservists prompted both political and military leaders to moderate threats of escalation. Reports of a lack of equipment and proper training for many of the reserve units have spread like brush fire through Israeli society. "We're just not ready," says a reserve paratrooper, "in terms of training or on a weapons basis. It is an absurd situation. Hezbollah," he says, "has better weapons than we do." A sergeant says when he reported for duty recently with his reserve unit, there was a serious lack of gear. "There are a lot of guns, but we were missing the appropriate guns and appropriate scopes to put on those guns. And basically, there is no armor whatsoever. There is not one bulletproof vest in my company." So, are they imitating us? Are we imitating them? Allies joined in a great project to not equip our troops. From BBC News, British troops fighting in Iraq are under-equipped and overstretched, according to a group of members of Parliament. The All-Party Defense Committee, that means it's bipartisan or tripartisan in the British context, says the soldiers needed more helicopters and better protected patrol vehicles to shield them from roadside bombs. They also say operations in Afghanistan are being done on a shoestring. Committee Chairman James Arbuthnot, a conservative, said the troops now faced a significantly higher threat in southern Iraq. "We cannot send them on operations without giving them the tools they need to do the job," Arbuthnot said. British troops in Afghanistan have similar concerns there. The MP said the research had raised fundamental questions over whether the armed forces were structured, trained, and equipped to fulfill their role. More of the of news from outside the bubble? Yes, turning to our friend Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen. Five of the people arrested last week in the alleged airline terror plot are suspected of having attended training camps in Pakistan to learn the use of explosives, according to the British newspaper The Telegraph. One might ask, why would a country run by a military dictator who certainly has no delicacy about civil liberties, why would a country like that have training camps where budding terrorists can come to learn the use of explosives? Well, might one ask, indeed. Dateline Islamabad. From the Press Trust of India, the U.S. government has accused Pakistan of using the expensive helicopters provided by the U.S. government for projects other than counterterrorism and combating drug smuggling. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Ann Patterson had a recent meeting with the Interior Minister of Pakistan. Said the choppers were not being used for the purpose they were given. U.S. apparently had inside information that copters were not being used to monitor the activities of drug barons and terrorists. The Interior Minister, Aftab Sherpao, denied the charge. But a writer in the Sunday Times of London says, or asks, just whose side is Pakistan really on? For budding suicide bombers, all roads seem to lead to Pakistan, says a U.S. intelligence agent, quoted in the article. "The moment I heard the first news about the airline plot, I knew it was just a matter of time until we heard the word Pakistan." That's got to raise some questions, says the U.S. intelligence agent. It's Pakistan's intelligence agency, says this piece in the London Times, that turned the Taliban from a bunch of religious students into a movement that took over Afghanistan. According to Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, Pakistan's security agency continues to provide a safe haven, training Taliban to fight against British soldiers inside Afghanistan. Pakistan's president, Musharraf's decision to ally himself with the U.S. in the war on terror was a lucrative move. According to the Times of London, Pakistan has again become one of the biggest recipients of U.S. aid, as it was during the Afghan war against Soviet occupiers. It's just now received a new shipment, the agreement has been reached for Pakistan to receive a new shipment of high-tech aircraft. And we were told, ladies and gentlemen, at the time of 9/11, that Saudi Arabia was playing a double game. That was a common accusation against the Saudis, that they were standing in public as our allies, but we're encouraging funding the creation of madrasas, these schools, in areas outside Saudi Arabia to sort of act as a safety valve for opposition inside the country. Send them overseas. Rile them up over there. Well, double game, Pakistan. Double game, double set, double match. The Times of London points out the West has been willing to turn a blind eye to Abdul Qadir Khan, AQ Khan, the nuclear scientist who provided weapons technology to Iran, Libya, and North Korea. Musharraf's, quote, ludicrous claim, unquote, that these were the actions of an individual without the knowledge of the state was apparently accepted by Washington, despite evidence of military planes transporting parts for nuclear weapons. Those involved in the hunt for Osama bin Laden, continues this story in the Times of London, have long believed that Pakistan knows more than it has let on and may have tipped off al-Qaeda leaders, letting them escape. Our friends, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. We're so busy copywriting features, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the Rupert Murdoch Watch. On Friday of last week, by a majority of 7-4, a jury of 6 men and 5 women found in favor of a former head of the Scottish Socialist Party, Tommy Sheridan. He had filed a defamation lawsuit against the Rupert Murdoch-owned newspaper. Well, they call it one. News of the World. He sued the tabloid for printing articles in the last couple of years claiming he was an adulterer and had taken part in orgies at a swingers club. He was awarded about $400,000 in damages. This week we learned that Google has come to an agreement with the Rupert Murdoch-owned MySpace. Yes, Google and Rupert together in business. And the same News of the World newspaper, excuse me, has suspended its royal editor. That's right, they have a royal. He's not a member of the royal family. He's a person who covers or edits the coverage of the royal family. Clive Goodman, amid allegations of mobile phone hacking involving the Prince of Wales household. The journalist, excuse me, who's been at the paper for 20 years, was charged this week with 1 count of conspiring to intercept voicemail messages and 8 counts of intercepting voicemail messages between January and May this year. He's released on police bail and suspended by the Rupert Murdoch-owned newspaper. It sounds dramatic. It all sounds dramatic, ladies and gentlemen, but it could just as easily be comedic.
This week on Fox's newest comedy hit to be...
Rupert, richer than you'll ever be.
Rupert, you said there was only one more detail before you wrapped up your deal with us at Google?
Yes, I think you're going to have to change your slogan.
You mean, don't be evil?
Yeah, not a big deal. Mm. You just need to take out one word, and it's not evil.
Rupert, he's just like you and like me.
And Rupert's got to confront his royal correspondent.
What kind of idiot are you? I know, my kind of idiot.
But, sir, you said you wanted me to bug the Queen.
I didn't mean it literally.
And there's trouble at home.
Wendy, darling, what's the problem?
You know what the problem is.
Oh, we just had a wonderful conference at Pebble Beach. Mm-hmm. All the world's most powerful people were there. Mm-hmm. Coming to be with me. I mean with us. What's wrong with that?
You didn't tell me I'd have to wash the world's most powerful dishes.
Whether you're trying to run your household or the world, there's no shortage of headaches or laughs. Tuesday, right after So You Think You Can Perform an Appendectomy, it's Rupert. Comedy has never been this rich.
Who's always looking for new dirt? It's Rupert.
Fox, you can't get foxier.
How the hard things in life make us the people we are. And it would be nice to have life easy, but would we have come quite so far? For all of my sense and my knowing, I still miss you. I still wish that you were here. I wish you well, but I wish you were still here. I wish you well, and I wish you were still. Things were grateful for who you are now, and thankful to all who have passed through your life, who hurt you and who showed you how. But sometimes I just want to call you, makes me angry knowing how I miss you here. I wish you well, but I wish you were still here.
This is Le Show from Edinburgh, Scotland. And it's time to consider who's being protected by what in FEMA land. Four no-bid contracts awarded by the Federal Emergency Management Agency to house Katrina evacuees, so-called, although they were evacuating mainly from a flood caused by the Army Corps of Engineers, have ballooned in value from $400 million to $3.4 billion. Federal auditors and Congress are concerned about the disaster agency's management of the aftermath. The Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security is, for at least a second time, reviewing the contracts with Bechtel, the Shaw Group, Fluor Corporation, and CH2M Incorporated to provide 150,000 trailers, even as FEMA expects to competitively award at least $1 billion for similar work in future disasters. Review is underway into how the contracts were awarded, the parties involved, and their paperwork, according to Marta Metelko, spokeswoman for the Inspector General. She cited the dollars and risk associated with sole source contracts. The contracts were quickly awarded as Katrina approached the Gulf Coast. They've been repeatedly criticized by congressional auditors and a Senate investigation for poor safeguards and high costs. FEMA valued the contract at $2 billion last fall and winter, but the agency has raised the limit for each firm over the past several months. Maybe they just think they're playing poker. Raising the limits. I see nothing that indicates there is any favoritism whatsoever, says FEMA's deputy director. Now let's look at what it's like at the other end of the telescope. Touched by the scenes of chaos and misery they saw unfolding in Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, a team of health workers from Sioux City, Iowa, gassed up their mobile medical van, and drove 17 hours to Baton Rouge to lend a hand. They ended up sitting on their hands instead, according to the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Bureaucratic red tape over the issue of medical liability kept them from seeing a single patient. They returned to Iowa after a week, angry and frustrated, while many hurricane victims and flood victims in Louisiana went without their much-needed assistance. Nearly a year later, little has changed to address what most agree is a major flaw. The federal government still requires volunteer health workers to jump through bureaucratic hoops before they can offer their services in a disaster zone, and Congress has yet to act on a bill designed to speed things along. But if you want to be a sole source bidder that constantly gets your limit of costs raised, why, you go ahead on, boy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here come the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Hey, ain't that Paul McCartney? And ain't he sorry? Dateline Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa has apologized to Muslim leaders who accused him of taking Israel's side in the violence in Lebanon by going to a pro-Israel rally and ignoring their invitations to interfaith peace vigils. Villaraigosa met with 10 Muslim leaders and explained that a mix-up by his staff had prevented him from seeing their invitations, said his spokeswoman. The mayor did apologize that the staff didn't place the meeting on his schedule sooner. She described the mayor's hour-long discussion as open and friendly. Dateline Chicago. We made an inadvertent but hurtful error Tuesday night. This is from the Chicago Tribune. In an effort to get as much news as possible into the Tribune sports section, we would like to apologize to Eddie Johnson, his family, and friends, and our readers. An AP story detailing the arrest of former NBA All-Star Eddie Johnson moved across the wire, and a decision was made to get it into the sports section. In Chicago, former NBA star Eddie Johnson means Eddie Johnson, a forward from Westinghouse High School in the University of Illinois. The Eddie Johnson who went on to a 17-year pro career with 7 NBA teams. Unfortunately, the man arrested Tuesday was the other Eddie Johnson, a 6'2 guard from Auburn who had a 10-year career with 3 NBA teams and has been in and out of trouble with the law since he quit playing in 1987. In the last paragraph of the Wire story, the other Eddie Johnson was correctly identified as a former Atlanta Hawks All-Star, but in our haste to make the deadline, we failed to make the distinction. Kind of a reminder of a bygone era when there were too many Johnsons in the NBA. In the most recent in a series of online controversies to take on the mainstream media, a series of websites discredited a Reuters photograph of the fighting in Lebanon, forcing the news agency to issue an apology and remove the image from their archives. The Reuters news agency issued a statement acknowledging that photo editing software was improperly used. A corrected version will immediately follow. We are sorry for any inconvenience. The photographer has been suspended, and all of his photographs have been removed. Deadline Baghdad, a pre-dawn raid by Iraqi troops and American military advisors on a stronghold of Shiite, can I say that on the air? Cleric Muqtada al-Sadr erupted into a 2-hour gun battle, according to residents in the U.S. military. The operation was aimed at individuals involved in punishment and torture cell activities, says the U.S. military. But Iraqi Prime Minister al-Maliki sharply criticized the operation, saying it could hinder his efforts at reconciliation. Maliki, who's been working with U.S. commanders on a new program to crack down on violence, appeared on local television and said he was very angered and pained. The operation used weapons that are unreasonable to detain someone, like using planes, he said. He apologized to the Iraqi people for the operation, saying, quote, "This won't happen again." Dateline Lompoc, California, or Lompoc. Police Chief Bill Brown and other city officials apologized to students and their parents for mishandling a March 31st campus walkout to protest U.S. immigration policy. "I take full responsibility for what occurred, and I apologize to you," Brown said. 63 students were detained and cited by police after they walked out of class. Many of them were taken to the police station. The public apology at City Hall was part of a legal settlement with the city. So we know it's from the heart, the lawyer's heart. Dateline Broward County, Florida. Major John Brooks, a high-ranking officer for the Broward Sheriff's Office, apologized this week for derogatory comments he and other officers made during a police training video following a free trade area of the Americas summit 3 years ago. His apology came on the same day the Miami Herald published a story about the tape. The tape shows Brooks and other officers praising each other for shooting protesters with rubber bullets at the convention a day earlier. Quote, "First of all, I'm here to apologize for the comments. They were inappropriate and unprofessional," Brooks said. "Looking back at the tape, in hindsight, I shouldn't have said those things." The tape shows Brooks, who was then a captain, addressing dozens of deputies in an outdoor Broward Sheriff's Office tent. "How about yesterday, huh?" Brooks says, complimenting the officers for their work during the protests. "I would go to war with everyone here. I went home. I couldn't sleep. I was just so pumped up about how good you guys were. You're the best I've ever been with." And much more. Maybe that was part of a legal settlement, too. Deadline Colombo, Sri Lanka. A TV broadcaster has apologized for racist remarks made by one of its analysts during coverage of the continuing test cricket series between Sri Lanka and South Africa. 10 Sports issued a statement saying it deeply regretted the incident involving former Australian cricket player turned commentator Dane Jones. Jones was fired immediately after referring to South African batsman Hashim Amla as a terrorist. Amla, a devout Muslim, is easily recognizable in cricket circles. Oh, boy, to be in those. For his flowing black beard. According to a statement issued by Cricket South Africa, viewers heard Jones say, quote, "The terrorist has got another wicket." That's a cricket term. Ten Sports marketing manager said the comment was made when Jones was off the air. "We terminated his contract immediately. There's no room for actions of these kinds." Jones had apologized to Amla personally and to the South African coach. He wears the beard for religious reasons and doesn't wear the team's logo on his uniform because it promotes alcohol. But proving that cricket is a more contentious sport than you or I thought, Dateline Johannesburg, the distribution company that displayed a racist message aimed at that same cricketer on an electronic advertising board in Johannesburg, apologized. The words, quote, "Thank goodness Amla didn't face a coolie creeper," were displayed on a board belonging to Toshiba, offending several motorists. This followed a few days after the incident apologized for earlier. Graham Lane, financial director of the distributor for Toshiba, in a statement apologized to the South African public and to Toshiba. "We apologize for any offense it could have caused. It is not our policy or intention to harm any ethnic group, faith, or individual." Although an employee said on, more than one employee said on talk radio that the managing director had given his personal approval for the racist message. I guess it's racist. It's racist to them. If it's racist to them. Dateline Kabul, Pakistan has released an Afghan Sikh journalist who was arrested on the Pakistan-Afghan border and tortured on charges of being an Indian national. And Pakistan has also apologized over the mistreatment. Pakistan expresses its apology over the arrest of Dayal Singh Ganjana. He was arrested on his way to attend an international conference on Pashto literature. He was tortured. Their charge was that he was an Indian national. I guess that's a crime. Dateline Helena, Montana. Senator Conrad Burns' recent verbal attack on a firefighting team for its work on a Montana blaze angered some firefighters, drew harsh criticism in state newspapers, and has left him scrambling to repair the political damage. He confronted members of a firefighting team at the Billings Airport on July 23rd and told them they had done a, quote, piss-poor job, unquote, according to the U.S. Forest Service in an official state report. The hotshot crew had traveled 2,000 miles from Virginia to help dig lines for about a week around a wildfire east of Billings. He apologized, did the senator, for his harsh remarks. And another legislator apologizing for harsh remarks. A member of parliament in Britain apologized after suggesting that a rise in diabetes in his Norfolk constituency was because people were, quote, inbred. AOL has apologized for posting 20 million keyword searches by more than 650,000 of its users on a research website, violating company rules on privacy. Quote, "This was a screw-up, and we're angry and upset about it," says AOL statement. Although there was no personally identifiable data linked to these accounts, we're absolutely not defending this. It was a mistake, and we apologize, and we should never have merged with Time Warner. No, they didn't say that. And oil company BP scrambled to assess suspected pipeline corrosion, shutting shipments from the nation's biggest oil field in Alaska. BP said it did not know how long the field would be offline. BP America Chairman and President Bob Malone said, quote, "We regret it is necessary to take this action, and we apologize to the nation and the state of Alaska for the adverse impacts it would cause." A BBC program had an interview this week with a BP employee who said the company had refused to take preventive actions, anti-corrosion actions on the pipeline, despite warnings from employees that the pipelines were beginning to suffer corrosion damage. And in a related topic, some oil and gas producers are falling behind with work to keep rusting North Sea infrastructure safe for workers and the environment. Some companies are doing maintenance, but others are having problems. This according to the Scotsman. If lack of maintenance affects safety, there could be a serious incident. The spokesman declined to say which companies were lagging on work, and why would we point a finger at BP now? The BP announcement of the pipeline difficulty, of course, sent prices up, as they were also sent up by a Mideast conflict. Prices for the benchmark light sweet crude. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, this might make you feel safer. The two top officials of counterintelligence field activities at our own Defense Department have resigned amid investigations into their agency's classified contracts with a businessman who's pleaded guilty to bribing department officials. That's the way to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world via the internet and your computer at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, and available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like us really being safer if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Address for this broadcast is LeMail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, and Chicago desks. And thanks to Graham Warman at Radio 4th here in Edinburgh, and to Pam Halstead. Le Show playlist available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Peoria.